Hello, everyone. I'm Dan Reiner, and this is the Hooks Baseball Podcast. Coming up on the show, Amy Johnson chats with Jace Tunnell, reserve director of the UT Austin Marine Science Institute based in Port Aransas, and J.D. Davis visits with former Hooks promotions assistant and on-field MC Kyle Kammerby. We lead things off this week with Astros outfielder Chaz McCormick, a 2019 MILB organization all-star who split last season between Corpus Christi and AAA Round Rock, and is currently in Houston participating in Astros summer camp as a member of the player pool. Chaz, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.
So let's start off with summer camp. How does it feel to be back out on the field?
Honestly, it feels great. I remember, our first day here a couple weeks ago, and it just felt good just to get back on the field and, even catch fly balls, hit batting practice on the field. I felt like a little kid again, the first couple of days, because I was just super excited to get back out there with the guys as well.
I'm sure you didn't expect to make your Minute Maid Park debut under these circumstances, but it's got to be pretty cool patrolling that outfield. And Tuesday, you took Lance McCullers Jr. off the fence in center field. I bet that was a pretty cool experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the best part about summer camp. Being able to scrimmage against the big guys and being able to play in Minute Maid, that's a dream come true. I guess we've had three scrimmages. I've got to play in two, and it's been awesome so far.
We know MLB and the Astros have put out strict guidelines for day-to-day operations and, from sanitizing baseballs to no spitting. What kind of adjustments have you had to make to your routine throughout this whole thing, whether it's, just at practice or in those inter-squad games?
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, it's just trying to stay as safe as possible, for everyone's sake. It's just the rules it's the no spinning and the 6 feet apart and the, wearing a mask. And you honestly just can't get too close to everyone, basically. You just got to, know where you are at the time, and, you got to be responsible, just like, going to a gas station or going outside for a little bit. You never know who you're in contact with, and you never know where it is. And it's honestly a scary thought, because you could walk past somebody and it could get attached to you right there and then. You have no idea. So, I think these safety and testing protocols every other day are huge. I think, they're doing a great job with our testing every day and making sure we're inside, most of the time, and making sure we don't leave the hotel, after practice, and, our getting on the bus, making sure we're just taking one stop at a time, getting on the bus and getting right inside. Then, getting after your work. And then when your work's done, you get right back into your hotel. You just got to be responsible and accountable for each other.
Yeah, I think that from reports so far, you look at the two major leagues that are trying to get back into play here, MLB and the NBA, and we've already seen reports of NBA players breaking their bubble. But obviously it's a different circumstance because they are in a bubble. MLB players, you guys kind of have to be trusted to, to follow those protocols. And, you just hope that everyone's going to be smart about it. I think that it's hard to, like you said, you just never know. You could be following all the safety measures and still pick it up from, from a secondhand contact or something like that. But it's really just about being smart, not going out in public if you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Basketball is a little different just because, everyone's kind of right on top of each other. And it's cool because baseball is a sport where everyone's pretty much 6 feet apart, You got your infielders, outfielders, and hitters. And, besides, I guess, the hitter and the catcher when we're going live. But I think that's pretty interesting. But it's also a scary thing with the test results come in every second day. So, you can get tested. And then later that night you run into somebody or whatever, and you accidentally get it. You have no idea. And the next day, we don't get a result until the following day. So, you know, like you never really know going in that next day, you could have got it. And then, you know, you're in the clubhouse and then just like that, all 13 of us have it, you know?
Right. So what does your day to day look like since you've been in camp? I know that you guys usually have an early start. You're back in the hotel right now as we record this midday. And then are you mentioned before we started that we're recording this via Zoom, and I didn't realize that you guys are still talking to coaches over Zoom even while you're in Houston at summer camp. So what is your daily routine look like?
Our daily routine has been get to the field around 8, and then, you know, we'll all hit defense, lift, you know, basically till 12 or 1, and then usually our day's done at 1, unless we have a scrimmage at Minute Maid that day, you know, and then we'll really just basically practice from, you know, 9 to 12 or 9 to 1, and then, you know, inter squads usually around 3 or 4 or 5, so we'll play, you know, most of that day. And then, you know, we'll get back around 6 at night if we have a scrimmage, or, you know, if it's just practice in the morning, then it'll just, we get back usually around 1 in the afternoon. Earlier when we got here, we had, you know, probably a Zoom call every night. And it was just basically some of our coordinators going on what we're going to do, you know, what the plan is, safety protocols. We went over in the beginning of phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, you know, basically, you know, we're in phase 2 right now. So, you know, so scrimmaging, you know, getting a little more comfortable. You know, phase 1 was like, you know, sanitize each ball every time you pick it up, you know, no spitting at all. So phase 3 obviously will be in a week, I guess. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough to stick with your plan, stick with your routine every day. On top with these safety protocols. So it's a challenge, but got to make adjustments.
So there's a notion that hitters are far behind pitchers in terms of timing and the shape that they're in at this point, simply because hitters haven't had the reps against live pitching since March, whereas, you know, pitchers might have had their own bullpen sessions at home or at their, you know, wherever they're from, wherever they're living. Do you believe that to be true? And, you know, what are you and the other Astros hitters doing to accelerate that process of normally in spring training, you'd have, you know, 6 or so weeks to catch up here. I think you have 3 weeks from when you guys arrive to the start of the season next week.
Yeah. I mean, it's 100% true. I mean, even just hopping in the box these past 2 days against live pitching, I was even talking to Ronnie Dawson. It's, you know, syncing up with a pitcher and, you know, loading your timing. That's the hardest part. It just feels strange right now. And obviously, you know, the more reps you get, the better you feel up to the plate. But I feel like we started off a little slow, at least the taxi team, because we haven't really been able to face live as much. So that's definitely – the pitchers seem like they are in mid-season form while we're still in spring training form.
I can't imagine it's really that fun, even though you did hit that double off McCullers on Tuesday. I can't imagine it's fun, like, seeing – his 98 and then that curveball when you haven't seen that kind of stuff in months.
Yeah. I haven't seen a McCullers change up, you know, in months or years. So, you know, even I was playing center field behind Verlander, you know, yesterday, and just like watching him, it was, you know, I've never seen anything like it, just how dominant and how on point he is. And as a hitter, it's almost impossible, you know, it's tough. But to face those guys, you know, that top level and being in the form we are now, I mean, it's only going to get us better. It's a huge challenge, but, you know, that's what we want.
So you're working out at the University of Houston. We haven't really gotten any clues as to the players that are going to be carried on the 25 or 30 man roster when all things start up on the 23rd, but, you know, wherever you end up, whether you're carried with the team and on the taxi squad, or you're down here in Corpus Christi training as an alternate, you know, what does it say for you personally, you know, to be included on that first 56 in the initial player pool?
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, like, obviously, you know, I'm not in the big leagues yet. But, you know, just being able to make this 56-man pool, it's been an honor. Like, I'm just happy to be here, being, you know, playing baseball every day, getting better every day. And you can't take this, you know, you can't take these things for granted. You know, like, obviously summer camp's a grind. You know, it's tough being hot, being outside all day. But like this opportunity, you cannot take for granted. So, I mean, like, I've never been happier to be, you know, back on a field, back playing baseball, you know, with the guys, with the coaches that have helped me so much throughout these couple years that, you know, it's an honor to be here.
You had your first big league camp this spring training 2020. You played 15 mm-hmm. games before the shutdown. To your highlights, the grand slam on February 25th, and then the walk-off solo shot against the Mets on March 6th. How cool was that experience for you?
Awesome. Like, you know, hitting that grand slam, best feeling ever. You know, even the walk-off was an awesome feeling. I didn't play as good as I wanted to, you know, so obviously I want to do more of it. You know, like, I try to tend to stay in the present moment. So, you know, those home runs are cool to do, but, you know, it's in the past as of right now. But, like, you know, being able to do that in my first big league camp was, you know, surreal. But, you know, honestly, to tell you the truth, I hurt my back, you know, a couple months before spring training. So I kind of, like, you know, fell behind a little bit in my lifting and my swinging. So, honestly, I didn't feel 100% going into spring training one. But, you know, during this quarantine, I've actually built back up to 100%. And, you know, now I feel 100%. So it's, you know, it's good to have another spring training.
Right. Kind of prove your worth after you know, you didn't feel like you were completely yourself, even though you did have those cool moments. So let's talk about your 2019 season, which was your best as a pro so far. You had a .386 on base percentage between Corpus and Round Rock. And walked more than you struck out, 67 walks to 62 strikeouts, which is essentially unheard of these days, especially it was your first full season at the higher levels. You've always had a knack for getting on base, but what's your approach at the plate and how did it all come together last year?
Yeah, well, you know, my approach at the plate is always basically, you know, 90% fastball, 10% all speed. So I'm not, you know, technically fully committed to a fastball. So I can, you know, see and sit on spinners a little better. But, you know, a con for that is sometimes I foul fastballs back. Sometimes I just miss them. But I worked on a lot of – in 2018, I lost some balance in my swing. You know, I would be a lot on my back foot and fall to my knee. I wouldn't put any weight on my front knee that, you know, would make me lose balance. So in 2019 or before 2019, you know, the 2018 off season, I'm constantly doing drills of like getting weight on my front knee, you know, moving forward instead of sideways or, you know, dipping immediately. You know, I'm just kind of getting that direct up the middle movement. So I have weight on my front knee and I'm also, you know, going directly up the middle with the ball, staying through the zone, staying on plane as long as possible. And I think that, you know, that helped me put the ball in the air and help with my power numbers. And obviously with the walks and strikeouts, I mean, I went into that year with great plate discipline, especially in Double A. You know, I watched a couple of videos of my first half in Double A in 2019. And yeah, that's what you have to do when you move up. Especially when you get to the big league level, like you gotta have a specific zone and you gotta look for a pitch that you can hit over, you know, 95 miles per hour. You gotta lay off pitchers. You gotta lay off pitches that, you know, pitchers make that are almost perfect, you know? So you gotta also have great discipline.
So your prowess is obviously, it's there on paper at the plate, but no one would know unless they watch you just how much of a demon you are on the field. And that was on display a lot last year. You know, you had that home run robbery in the playoffs in Round Rock. But of course the one that Corpus fans remember here is the catch on May 6th in Tulsa, flipping over the wall, ended up number 2 on SportsCenter and featured across the internet. Basically we even wrote a feature about you and you walked us through how you made that catch, which is on PCHooks.com.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So now that you've had a year plus to reflect on that play, what's your biggest takeaway from being like a, you know, that 15 minutes of fame internet celebrity?
I mean, I feel like I've been making those catches for, you know, a while now. I mean, I've even made some great catches in college. I've always, you know, I've always been passionate about defense. I mean, hitting is obviously very hard. So, and again, as you move up in the higher levels, you got to have tools, you know, six different tools that you can hit. You can play defense, you can throw, you can run. So if you put all that together, man, your value goes way up. And you open some eyes up. But that making that catch, or, you know, basically making SportsCenter twice last year, was surreal. Like I never thought I'd be on SportsCenter twice in one year. But yeah, I mean, it was cool just to get a bunch of text messages and calls from, you know, people around the area just saying, wow, that was awesome. And even doing videos with you, with the staff, you know, talking about the catch, going through, you know, each step, talking to reporters about the catch. It was fun. I mean,
right. It's something that'll kind of, you'll always remember. Right. And especially if it's reported the way it was. So,
yeah.
You were a 21st round draft pick out of Division II Millersville University in your native Pennsylvania. And now you're the 25th ranked prospect in the Astros farm system, according to MLB Pipeline. I mean, did you ever imagine that you'd get that kind of notoriety? I mean, you know, your work ethic has always been on display. You know, talking to your college coach last year, he kind of knew. He said that the Astros were the only team that had you on their draft board, and you lasted all the way till the 21st round. But, you know, to get where you are now, you know, to reach AAA last year and, you know, to make the player pool and all that, and you're being ranked now as a prospect. I mean, did you ever imagine it happening?
Honestly, no. I mean, I remember I got drafted. I was happy about getting drafted, and I got into rookie ball. And, you know, for a couple weeks, I was kind of like, you know, am I going to be able to do this? Like, you know, second, you know, doubting myself a little bit. I was, you know, just a little bit of awe, you know, just seeing the velocities guys are throwing, seeing the guys, you know, as far as they hit. So yeah, I didn't think I was gonna, you know, turn into a prospect, be in AAA by 2020. But honestly, I never stopped believing. I mean, I kept working, and yeah, I'm also huge on, you know, keeping your body healthy and making sure physically, mentally, emotionally, you're ready to go every single day. And you know, as long as I stayed healthy, I thought I could, you know, do some good things. You know, each year of pro ball, I just carried momentum. You know, after every single season, I carried momentum in my off season and then into the next season. And you know, I've said this before, I you got to play with a sense of urgency, you know, especially in pro ball. It's like, this game doesn't last forever. You know, it actually flies by. So it's been awesome being able to get drafted at 17 and already, you know, moving up this quickly through the system in 20. But, you know, I mean, I'm going to keep pushing. It's not something you can just, you know, give up. Like, okay, I hit my reach point, my goal, I'm good now.
Is there any kind of pressure that maybe you put on yourself? First of all, you would be the first position player ever out of Millersville to reach the majors if you reach that point. You know, you're from a small town, you're from a small university. Is there any kind of pressure that you put on yourself to get to that point, you know, to be the pride of that area?
Yeah, I definitely put a lot of pressure on myself. I mean, I have high expectations, you know, to do well. And sometimes that works and sometimes that hurts, because, you know, when I'm not playing that well, sometimes mentally I take it over to the next day and to the next day and to the next day. And you gotta, you know, just stay in the present moment. And even if you're struggling, just keep pushing. I want to play well, obviously, and do that every single day. So yes, you can put, I do tend to put pressure on myself, but again, this game is so beautiful and this game goes so fast that putting pressure on you just doesn't really help. I feel like you got to go out there and don't even worry. Like, you got to play with pressure as a privilege. And that I've heard someone say that, and you know, that's right. You got to enjoy pressure. And you know, I think that's a good way that helped me kind of keep pushing through my mistakes or challenges.
Well, I think that your work ethic is definitely admirable, and you obviously have a big fan base behind you here in Corpus, back home, wherever it is. And, you know, whether it's with the Astros this season or you're back down here in Corpus training, you know, hoping for that call up, I think we all look forward to seeing you out on the field. So Chaz, with that, I'll let you go. I know that you probably want to take a nap after a morning training out in the hot sun. It's like 110 degrees out there today. So.
Oh, it killed me today.
Well, thanks again so much for joining us, and good luck with everything this year.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Hi, y'all. It's Amy Johnson. This week, I'm joined by Jace Tunnell. Jace is the director of the Mission Aransas Research Reserve at the University of Texas Marine Science Institute. Jace, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, it's the middle of the summer. I know a lot of people have the beach and the coast on their mind, so we thought it'd be a great idea to talk to somebody highly involved with the coast and everything like that. So first off, can you just tell us a little bit about the Mission Aransas Research Reserve and what you do on a daily basis?
Oh, sure. So, we're located there in Port Aransas at the university, and that's kind of our headquarters. But actually, we have a kind of a working boundary that we work in, and that's Copano and Aransas Bays. So that's the bay system just north of Corpus Christi Bay. And we do a lot of research. That's kind of what's in our organization's name. And so we have data platforms that are out there collecting water quality data. So whenever fishermen are going to go out fishing, they can pull up what the water temperatures are, what the dissolved oxygen are, what there's weather stations on them, so they can see what the weather's like. And so that's one of the things we do. We also do a lot of education and outreach. And so there's a number of different ways we do that. We have a whole education staff that brings kids and teachers out onto the campus, and they do all kinds of what you'd expect at a marine science institute. You know, they're taking water quality samples and looking under a microscope, dissecting fish, all kinds of stuff like that. And then some of the other things we do is like we host training workshops. And so there's a lot of people in agencies and in other organizations that are making decisions about different developments that are happening, about different fisheries that are going on. And so we try to get all that science together and put it into a format that people can understand. And then we bring those decision makers together so that hopefully we're making science-based decisions whenever we're talking about, you know, where dredge canals should go or where we're going to put a pier or dock in or something like that.
Really cool. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting to hear about this stuff too, because people think of the Corpus and it's like, oh, the beach. Like, no, there's much more to the coastal bend than just the beach.
Right, and you're exactly right. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the other big things we do is we always like to educate people about the beach. And so we're on the beach. I mean, I'm on the beach every single day. And so we've actually done a few different things, like especially since COVID, everyone's inside. Sometimes the beach is closed down. Some people can't get to the beach. So we tried to start creating these videos where people felt like they were at the beach and they could still learn something about the beach. So we started beachcombing videos, and we started doing behind the scenes videos of some of the work that we do. And so just trying to people that are cooped up inside, helping them feel like, you know, they can still get outdoors and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's really neat. I'm sure, I mean, like almost every other business, you know, they've had to somewhat transition to virtual in one way or the other. So the videos you've been making, had y'all been making videos before, and then you've kind of just had to get creative ways to increase those efforts?
How we did it before was, you know, about once a month or every other month, we'd post a video or something, a research project we're doing, or, you know, some kind of cool animal we'd find. But whenever the COVID hit in mid-March, we realized it's like we need to get a game plan, and we need to be, you know, 6 days a week, we need to be putting videos out there. So that's what we started doing. So that's a lot of the time of staff is putting together educational videos, and they're not the typical education videos where they're talking about math or something like that. You know, they're on the beach and they're finding different things on the beach, or showing teachers how to make things for their students. So there's one on fish printing, And there's so they can watch this video with their students, and they can see how to make a fish print and things like that. And so there's a whole series of videos. And then the other thing we've been doing is, you know, we have the Amos Rehabilitation Keep that Alicia Walker runs there on campus. And so, you know, you talk about people getting excited about the outdoors and stuff, you know, seeing a sea turtle, seeing birds up close, things like that. So we've dedicated, you know, at least one day a week and sometimes multiple days a week to the ARC and the sea turtles and birds and stuff like that. And so you'll see a lot of videos, like we just did a sea turtle release this last week. And so it was all virtual. And so whenever the staff were taking the turtles down to the water to release them, they talked about why those turtles came in, how long they were there, what type of treatment they got, and then they released them back into the Gulf. And so hopefully people felt like they were almost there at the sea turtle release.
Yeah, that's really neat. Are these going to the Facebook page for Mission Aransas Reserve, or where's the best place, I guess, for people to check those out?
Yeah, so there's actually four different pages, and so they all cross-post. And so it's Mission Aransas Reserve, it's the ARC Facebook page, it's the University of Texas Marine Science Institute page, and then the Bay Education Center, which is an education facility we have over in Rockport. And so those four pages right there, at the same time, 1 o'clock, Monday through Saturday, these videos are posted.
Great. Plenty of options to check those out.
All right.
So I want to transition just over to you. You know, obviously you're probably passionate about where you live. You know, your work is where you live. Can you just tell me a little bit about, you know, who you are and how you got into this sort of work?
Okay, sure. Well, I'll start where I was born. I was born in Taft, Texas. And so you know where Taft is, right? That's a mm-hmm. little town just outside of Corpus in Portland. And so I'm fourth generation here. I grew up here. Went to high school at King High School, and then college for bachelor's and master's at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. And so my buddies give me a hard time now because I work for the University of Texas, you know.
Hey, nothing wrong with that, you know. I got to throw my bias in there. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. After I ended up getting married in graduate school, then my wife and I moved out to Florida because we're both marine biologists. So we got jobs out there and we're storing wetlands and doing a lot of diving and stuff. And then after about 5 years, moved back to Corpus. Everybody always comes back to Corpus. Don't ever tell people they move away forever. But we moved back in 2006, and then I worked for the Coastal Bend Bays and Estuaries Program as the Director of Research and Planning, and did a lot of water quality type projects and restoration type projects. And then in 2014, I became the Director of the Mission Aransas Reserve. And so that's sort of my life history in 2 minutes.
Yeah, cool. It sounds like it's always kind of been around the water one way or another. So I know you're highly involved in things, you know, outside of work as well, you know, other things. And you mentioned the Coastal Bend Bays Foundation. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what you do with them?
Yeah, so in 2010, I was looking for a way to get more involved in environmental stuff that was beyond just my work. And so I became a trustee with the Coastal Bend Bays Foundation. And so they host, a lot of people have heard of the Earth Day Bay Day. That's a big celebration with a bunch of, you know, to celebrate Earth Day in the month of April. And a bunch of different groups come in there. They actually see about 15,000 people a year. Of course, this year it had to be canceled due to COVID. But in normal year, you know, there's about 15,000 people that come down. It's held at Heritage Park. So that's like their big event. They also do an environmental awards banquet where they give about 10 awards out to different environmental businesses that are doing good environmental work, industry, individuals, teachers. And so there's all these categories where they give awards out for each year for folks doing good environmental work. And then last, they do the Coastal Issues Forum. And so every month they have a different environmental topic, and at Del Mar Center for Economic Development Center, they host this forum where they'll bring somebody in to talk about, one time they talked about desal. Every January, the Port of Corpus Christi comes in and talks about their environmental initiatives and stuff like that. And so it's a really good way for people to keep in tune to what's going on environmentally, locally. And then finally, they also do, they're a part of the General Land Office's Adopt a Beach program. And so you probably heard of that. Three times a year, there are cleanups at 11 different spots around the coastal bend. And so people can Google this, TexasAdoptABeach.org, and they can find out where the cleanups are, and then they can choose whichever one they go to. Now, the Coastal Bend Bays Foundation does this cleanup at Packery Flats. And so a lot of people, it gets confusing when you talk about Packery Flats or Packery Channel or North Packery Beach, mm-hmm. or, you know, there's a whole bunch of Packery stuff, but it's all in right. the same kind of area. But we find that there's always a lot of trash there. It's along a highway. And so when people are driving out from, they throw their trash in the back of the truck, and then once they get on the highway, you know, that stuff just flies out. And so there's always a lot of good trash picking there.
Yeah, I bet. I know we had a blast last year when it was our inaugural Coastal Bend Conservation Weekend at the ballpark, and we put together that beach cleanup, you know, with a bunch of you guys and the organizations, and we had a blast with mm-hmm. that. But it was crazy, you know, we covered like four different areas, and there's just so much different area to cover. I mean, like you said, where it's flying out of the trucks, like it's along the highways. It's still part of our coast, you know, it's not directly on the water, but, you mm-hmm. know, it's still important.
Well, yeah, and what we always tell people is, like, if it's on land, it's going to end up in the bays, because, you know, what happens when it rains? You know, everything that's on the ground gets picked up and washed into the nearest waterway, which eventually gets to the bay and then the ocean. So
right.
you know, anytime people see trash, pick it up.
Right. Well, that's actually a great segue. It is July, and you mentioned to me that it's plastic-free July. So what advice do you have for our fans, for our listeners, about what they can do at a consumer level, you know, when they're going to the beach, just in general, like daily life? Like, what is advice you have for them, not just, you know, in this plastic-free July, but year-round?
Yeah, well, so this plastic-free July is to try to get people to think about how in their own lives daily they're using plastic and how they can reduce that. And so there's a few real simple things that we can do. Everybody's probably seen that video where the straw is being pulled out of the turtle's nostril.
Mm-hmm.
That's really bad. So we always tell people, you know, skip the straw, don't use the straw. And actually, a lot of people think, well, you know, I'm gonna use the straw, but then I'll recycle it. Well, the straw is so small, it can't really even be recycled. Most recycling centers cannot recycle something that small. So we say, skip the straw. That's an easy one, you know.
Skip the straw.
Skip the straw. And then the next one is water bottles. And so, you know, a lot of people, I see people drinking out of these plastic water bottles all the time. And, you know, you can drink a water bottle in 20 seconds, and then that whole bottle's done. You know, they throw it away or recycle it. But in actuality, that we live in the United States of America where there's clean water. There's no need to have a water bottle made of plastic unless it's a reusable one. And so I think, you know, I always tell people, you'll never see me drinking out of a plastic water bottle unless it's a reusable one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a personal choice for me that I do all year long. But it'd be nice if people start doing that at least in the month of July.
Mm-hmm.
And see how they do. And then last is, we always hear about the reusable bags for going to the grocery store. And so, you know, one individual uses about 500 plastic bags per year.
Wow.
And so think about that, you know, that's a lot of plastic.
Yeah.
That really you're just carrying from the store to your house. And so what I do is I always take my reusable bag, and if they say, well, we can't give it to you if you don't, we don't allow reusable bags, because some places aren't right now because of COVID, because
right.
they think that, you know. But I just say, okay, well, I'll just leave it in the basket, and then I put my groceries in the back of my seat just loose, you know, and then I take
okay.
them in. It's, you know, but that's an easy way that people can try to reduce their use of plastic.
Right. I mean, one way or another, you're probably going to take the basket back outside anyways. So, I mean, you could just bag them yourself once you get to the car with your reusable bags.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's great advice, because I know that was one thing that kind of bothered me. I mean, it makes sense, obviously. Like, I understand the precaution for COVID. I was like, dang it, you know, like, I don't want all these bags. I don't need all these bags. So I hadn't even thought to do that. So I appreciate it even for myself, you bringing up that advice.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think outside the box.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us today. It was very interesting to hear, you know, kind of about what you guys are doing and, you know, all the videos. So hopefully, you know, some of our fans will check out, you know, from those four sites that you told us about. And we can continue this plastic-free July and make it a plastic-free year.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. And next on the podcast, we are joined by Hooks fan favorite, Kyle Kammerbake. Kyle was the on-field MC for the Hooks for three seasons from 2017 to 2019, a good friend and a great guy, and we're happy to have him on. Kyle's now with the Gwinnett Stripers out in Georgia. Kyle, how are you doing today?
Hot, I could tell you that. We are hosting our taxi squad at our stadium in Gwinnett because we're only about 45 miles away from the stadium, and so I was on the grounds crew all day out in the sun.
So you've been busy. You've been, you know, and that's what minor league baseball is all about, right? Wearing a bunch of hats and doing a little bit of everything.
Minor league baseball is the definition of you learn everybody else's job. And so you're a jack of all trades. So that's a great thing about working in minor league baseball. That's why I would recommend it for anybody coming out of college. It's a job and you learn how to do everything. I mean, did I think when I signed up for this job in January that I'd be cleaning toilets as a part of grounds crew? No, but you know what? I'm doing it and we're rocking and rolling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we've all been there. We've all, you know, we've wrapped hot dogs. When one of my first jobs, I was working on the video production team for the Quad Cities River Bandits, but on kids' day, we had to get to the stadium at about 4 o'clock in the morning and wrap hot dogs. So we had enough hot dogs for all the kids to help out with the concession crew. We pulled tarp. We've done a little bit of it all.
My question for you there is, Quad City, were those hot dogs wrapped at 4 a.m. and then sold at 7 p.m.?
It was one of the kids' day games. So
okay.
It was an 11 a.m. game for all the kids to get out of school and watch some baseball and listen to some SpongeBob. It was a good time.
That's all we're looking for.
There's nothing like eating a hot dog at 5 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I can tell you from experience, it's one of the most delicious breakfast foods.
I mean, breakfast sausage is very similar. Just wrapping a pancake. I'm sure they sell that at Taco Bell or Burger King or something like that.
Yeah. We're already off the rails here. This is about how any conversation with Kyle and I goes. Kyle and I, now that we've gotten to work together for several years, got to know each other, it takes about 30 seconds for us to just completely derail and go from there. But I'm gonna get us back on track. You mentioned you recommend working in minor league baseball out of college and how important and how helpful that can be for anybody, even if they don't, you know, plan to stay in the sport forever. But I want to talk a little bit about your college experience and what you did post-college working at Disney and kind of how that shaped, you know, your look on entertainment and customer service and how that led to the sports world. So can you talk us through a little bit of what that experience was like?
Yes. So I did the Disney College program. So that's where if you're in college and you want to take a semester off or just go out and have fun in Florida, you do that. So for 6 months, I worked at Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida. And I worked, if you've ever been in Disney World, I worked in Dinoland USA, which is a part of Animal Kingdom. I pushed buttons on rides. That's what I did. I was a carny. But one thing, I also got school credit for it, so that was great. But one thing that Disney really taught me was that the first day they sat down and were like, listen, every family that comes here, a family of four, will save up money for 3 years to come here. And they're going to get in the line at your ride. And if you're like, oh man, I had a bad day today, or oh, I woke up too early, didn't get enough sleep, woke up wrong side of the bed or something like that, and you're going to ruin their 3 years of savings to come, that's unacceptable. Because if you were in their shoes, you would hate that. So you have to treat every day and every person you come across with that this is something they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. Now, something I really enjoyed with the Hooks, being the on-field MC, is because I know when I was a kid, I was participating in the Hershey Kiss race contest at a Texas A&M baseball game. And my mom still talks about that. And I feel like a picture of me in a Hershey Kiss outfit was on the refrigerator for a long time. And so every time somebody would do Dizzy Bat or a hot dog eating contest or a dance contest or something like that, they're going to remember that for the rest of their lives. And I just want to make sure that it's a happy memory and not something that kind of sticks out as a sour one.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I want to get into your kind of Hooks experience and what that looks like in a minute. But, you know, maybe this ties in with the Disney stuff and the Hooks stuff crossover. Part of that is it's a personal experience between you and the fan or the customer. It's a one-on-one thing, but it's also about having it's a group experience. You know, when you're the on-field MC, it's about connecting with that fan so that they feel comfortable and that they have fun and that they have this memory, but also about 5,000 people that are coming, you know, that come to the game and that they leave and have a good experience. And I'm sure that there's similar things on the Disney side where it's like you may have a one-on-one fan interaction and it's really important to get that right, but it's also important because those customers are there to be entertained and to have a good time. And so there's a little bit of a show that kind of goes along with that.
Yeah. A lot of people don't like being the center of attention. I don't mind being the center of attention, obviously, because I was given a microphone. But even if they aren't the one on camera, they aren't the one competing for a prize, I still want them to have a good time. I feel like between you and Amy and Neil, when he was there, and me, we did a really good job of having games that weren't just focused on one person alone. And so everybody could be involved, whether it's, you know, the fry shuffle or whether it was the vision where the blurry got blurry. It's been 6 months. I've already forgot. So people can guess along. Fan focus. That was it. There's the alliteration got me, where people could also participate in things like that, where if it's just one person doing one thing, I feel like it's not that much fun. And so even if you aren't the center of attention, you're still there. You're competing as a unit because you want the fan to succeed because they're one of you. They got picked out of your section or they're picked out of the stands. So I always feel like you have to have the audience surrogate as that contestant be a good representation of the whole crowd.
So when we first crossed paths, it was actually before you started with the Hooks, and you came on a recommendation from us, from the parent club up in Houston. And you spent time working with the promo team and working with world famous Orbit up there. How, you know, you did that for several years. And even while you're working for the Hooks, people may not know, there were times where you would go back and help out when they needed, maybe during the playoffs, or you're from the Houston area and had family up there. So you're traveling, you could jump in. What was that process like? How much fun is that working with Orbit? One of the most entertaining, entertaining aspects of all of baseball, I think. Just kind of tell us, you know, what that was like from your perspective.
Well, there are two things. I started off as on the part of the promo team, and I was there when they lost 100 games in a row, 3 years, 100 games, 3 years in a row. And so there's nobody at those games. I hate saying that. And so that, I felt like that was I'm not going to say a lot of fun, but it was interesting. It really stretched your creative juices because there weren't that many people there to be involved. So it was 100% on me or my partner or whatever to hype up the crowd, even though we're losing 12-3 in that bottom of the seventh, you know, so really was a good challenge. And then from that, they made the promo team all female. So they shifted me over to being one of the Orbit handlers. And I got to tell you, hanging out with Orbit is just as much fun as you think it is. He gets away with a lot of weird things, but all the fans love him. He's big, he's green, he's furry. I would work all the 81 home games. And Orbit also does 250 non-game appearances a year. People don't realize that. So even in the offseason, he'll go to birthday parties, he'll go to weddings, he'll go to school events, work functions. And he's always out there being a positive influence for the Astros brand, the Houston community. And sometimes they went well, sometimes they went poorly. Sometimes we go to an event and everyone's like, yeah, this is great, Orbit's here, making so many pictures. Other times we go to birthday parties where it's a five-year-old and the birthday girl is so scared of Orbit, she cannot be in the same room as him. So instead of Orbit presenting her with like, oh, here's your autographed jersey and you say it's a game, it's me out there going, hey guys, here you go. I don't know what to do. Like, I'm just a grown man in a polo. But Orbit is a lot of fun. And one thing I have to say listening, people say, why doesn't Orbit go up to the upper decks? The stairs are steep and he falls. His feet are big. I have to say that for him. It's tough. It's tough getting around. Do not crowd Orbit. That was one of my main things there. I had a little goodie bag that was filled with dreams and goodies. Orbit's the big man, the big cheese. He's in charge. And so make sure you don't crowd Orbit and always be nice. He will go out of his way to make you happy, but just you have to be nice to him first.
He's a lot of fun and it's always fun too. You know, I know we've gone back and you see there's photos of Orbit doing something, you know, spectacular and a grumpy Kyle in the background maybe, or, you know, handing supplies or whatever it might be.
Yeah. I was on if you got a souvenir cup in 2016 in Minute Maid Park, there's a picture of me frowning on it behind Orbit. And it was also on a huge mural on every level of the stadium. And I just looked like the biggest grump in the world. I try not to be, but I guarantee you what happened there was that Orbit probably pulled a prank on me and pranked me with a silly string or shot an air cannon at me or something like that. And I just like, all right, Orbit, let's relax here.
Let's get back to business. Well, hey, I want to, you know, I think this leads directly into your hook stuff, but I, as you know, somebody that's worked with you closely and knowing your background, I actually talked about this with Sam Levitt last week. And something that I admire about both of y'all that I brought up with him was that, Kyle, you're a guy who has a lot of fun with his job. You look like you're having fun, even, you know, jokes aside about looking grumpy behind Orbit. It's clear that you have fun when you're working with us with the hooks and being the on-field MC and doing that. But, you know, fans may not know the things that I know working with you is how dedicated and how serious and how much you want to make sure that you do a good job. So I guess, what was it? Is there anything else that you'd like to say about, you know, your experiences that made you, you know, that makes you that way, that allows you to kind of have that, this is a fun job and I couldn't be having more fun than possible, but also this is a serious job and I'm going to work really, really hard to make sure I can have that fun.
There was a TED talk. You know, you ever get into a stretch where you watch a TED talk, you know, watching like 12, it's like, oh, look, I learned about the llama population in Peru or something like that. It's just completely random. But there's one about finding your goal. And they say a lot of people work on the goal from the outside in rather than the inside out. So the outside is more the superficial things, whether it's, oh, I don't want to live near the beach, or I want to work for this certain company or something like that, whereas the inside is what your goal is. And you can find what your goal is on the inside to work your way out. And I realized a long time ago that my inside goal is I want to distract people from the monotony of life. And I know if you go to a job that works 9 to 5 and it's rough, your boss gives you a hard time, you're working too hard and getting paid too little or something like that. And you come home and it's a Thirsty Thursday and you go over to the minor league baseball game and you can spend minimal money, have a great time. And that's what I want to do. I want to be the person who's in charge of making sure people have a great time. And I realize the world kind of sucks. And especially right now, we're in I feel like I'm at the beginning of every email I've sent. It's like, oh, during these trying times, I hope I'm reaching you well. But I just realized that there's so much power in sports, because if you work, look, it's like 9 of the 10 most watched television programs last year were sports. People watch it all the time. There's so many different facets of it. It's popular all across the world. And it gives me a huge audience to reach out to people. Even if it's just so minimal as in like, hey, I threw my t-shirt in the stands. it'll brighten their day. It'll distract them from it. I talk about this. I was at a play in Houston. It was at Miller Outdoor Theater, if anybody's from Houston. And a guy approached me and said, I had thrown him a t-shirt 2 years ago. I never met this man before in my life, but he remembers that. And he remembers that the joy that brought him that I threw him a t-shirt, and I distracted him from that. I distracted him from whatever. It was a play that I wasn't a big fan of. So apparently I distracted him from that too. So that's a good thing.
Well, that's good. Well, let's talk about the hooks. You're there 3 seasons. What stands out? What are some of your favorite memories and experiences at Whataburger Field working with the hooks?
I feel like we had a good front office core, especially in Ballpark Entertainment with you and Neil and Alex and Amy and all that, and Courtney and all that, and Gil. We had a good core there, a good group. I feel like we always had a lot of fun, even though I was separated from all y'all the entire game. I was on the field, y'all are up in the production booth. I feel like we had a lot of fun. Interacting with the same people all the time, you realize who the fans are and how they appreciate what you do and you appreciate their support. It was weird getting recognized in like HEB frozen food aisle. I'm not exactly the most famous person in the world, but that was always weird.
Christie celebrity.
Yeah, I'm not a big deal, but I'm practically like Farrah Fawcett, Corpus Christi famous.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not Selena. I'm not Eva Longoria. I'm like right there. I don't know. You talk about famous individual memories. That's probably what you're getting at. I'm trying to think. We had a lot of weird dance-offs on Friday nights because you pick people and you're like, I don't know what they're going to do. And they do something absurd. And you're just like, that wasn't family friendly. We probably shouldn't have done that. we probably have some people scarred out there, but that's always fun. But I don't know if this person's going to listen to this, but my favorite interaction that I've had with a fan during a contest, it was Music Minute. It was Finish the Lyrics. And he really wanted to do it. And except he said, that was the only contest we had available. And he was super scared. He's like, I don't know music. I was like, we're going to pick the easiest song in the world for you. So I picked Tequila. Everybody's heard of Tequila. Spoiler, there's one word in the song, Tequila. And so I went, and he goes, ooh, Barracuda. And I just stared at him. I was like, come on, man. There's one word. You don't deserve this t-shirt. I'm going to give it to you. But come on, man. Like, why? And then I heard only twice in the 3 years over there did somebody get the Fry Shuffle wrong. Mm-hmm. Collective crowd gasp of that is hysterical. They'd be like, two. And we go, no. Like a collective, no. It was three. But I had a lot of fun doing that job. I got a lot of steps. I sweat a lot. I'm sure everybody who saw me during that saw that.
I feel like one of the things that we may enjoy as people that are working every single game, and that I think that you found, you know, enjoyment in too, was when there were certain moments where, you know, we want everybody to have a good time, and you would only do this in the right instance where it was a fun thing, not a negative thing, but maybe turn the crowd against the contestant a little bit at the end, if somebody maybe cheated in the dizzy bat race or, you know, wasn't following the rules. I always feel like those are some of my most favorite moments is, you know, Kyle egging on the fans to boo another fan instead of the other team.
There'd always be a person. One time we had a couple where one of them was wearing a Rangers shirt and one was wearing an Astros shirt. And so obviously we're an Astros affiliate. And so I made the Rangers person spin around until they fell down. And me and the Astros person didn't even move. We just stood there and watched. And so we have to make the Astros win because the AL West comes to Houston. I know it's tough for you to say, JD, growing up in the DFW area.
Absolutely. But I, you know, I'm an Astros, Astros fan as much as I can be. And enjoy it. So, you know, I recognize we're in the Corpus Christi community. We've got to be Astros first with all of that. So, I want to talk a little bit. I want to close out with what you're doing now. People may think that you're the head groundskeeper in Gwinnett, but you're actually doing promotion stuff. But obviously, with the season being canceled and y'all being a taxi squad, everybody's pitching in and wherever they are. I guess, you know, tell us for fans that don't know. You know, they may have never heard of Gwinnett, don't know where the Stripers are, affiliation, and kind of what that process has been like, as much as, you know, I know most of it's been cut off, but what it's been like so far for you.
Yeah, so I work for the Gwinnett Stripers. We're based in Lawrenceville, Georgia, which is about 45 minutes northeast of Atlanta. We're the AAA affiliate for the Atlanta Braves. We used to be the Gwinnett Braves until three seasons ago when we changed our name to the Stripers based on the striped bass, which is caught in Lake Lanier, which is in Gwinnett County, which is what we're being named after. I'm doing promotions and marketing. And so I'm in charge of all the stuff we give away at the gates, all the theme nights, and a lot of the in-game entertainment. Along with our creative service coordinator, we run through game scripts and things like that. Obviously we haven't had a game yet. And obviously we haven't had any chances to give away any of the items we've ordered, but we're looking forward to it. I think this crowd, this team recently got new management and they're definitely heading in a good direction. And we were last in the league in attendance last year, but things can only go up from here. And that's probably a big reason why I came here, for I wanted the challenge to turn this into a team that the community really relies on and really admires.
Yeah. Was there anything, you know, talking about going through and building a promo calendar, was there anything that that y'all released that what was the thing you were most looking forward to, I guess, in terms of giveaways? Was there any items that you were like, man, I couldn't wait for fans to get their hands on this?
I feel like we really went in on our Pride night. We were giving away a rainbow cape with our logo on it, and we were going to have all sorts of organizations. We had a LGBT square dancing group, an LGBT group on Harleys. We had LGBT choir. We were just having, it was going to seem like a lot of fun. Everybody in front office staff said that last year that was a lot of fun. So I feel like that would have been a fun event to work.
That's pretty cool. Well, hopefully you guys can bring the capes back in 2021 and use them then. I can't wait to see that. Kyle, anything else you want to close out with? Anything you want to leave the fans with?
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't get to do the 4th of July speech from Independence Day again. I know last year people screamed that it took too long for the fireworks to start, but Bill Pullman needed to go up there and inspire the troops to defeat those aliens.
It's spectacular. Fans, if you weren't at that game last year, Kyle took over the mic after the, I guess it wasn't the dance-off because it wasn't a Friday night. So we needed to do some sort of countdown, and Kyle provided the entire speech from the classic Independence Day film. And I think, there's probably a good 50% of the audience that still have no idea what that was, at least. But the ones that did really enjoyed it, and I would say, made it a hit on social media that night and became a little viral sensation for us in Corpus. But Kyle, you're one of the good ones. I love working with you. Miss you here in Corpus, and wish you the best of luck and hope that we get to cross paths again soon.
Yeah, if you're ever in Georgia, let me know. I'm sure I'll be in South Texas soon.
That wraps up today's show. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us today. Chaz McCormick, Jace Tunnel, and Kyle Kammerbake. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe in your favorite podcast app. Hit that subscribe button so that way new episodes will automatically be downloaded to your phone and ready to go as soon as they are available. For Dan Reiner, Amy Johnson, and everyone else at Whataburger Field, I'm JD Davis, thanking you for tuning in to the Hooks Baseball Podcast and reminding you to wear a mask when you're out in public and stay safe. Have a great week, everybody.